This is tape 4, side 2, page 154. Azim Itafrishi. This man of God came from the district of Tafrish. He was detached from the world, fearless, independent of kindred and stranger alike. He was one of the earliest believers and belonged to the company of the faithful. It was in Persia that he won the honor of belief and began to assist the friends. He was a servant to every believer, a trusted helper to every traveler. With Moshe Ichumi, upon whom be the glory of God, he came to Iraq, received his portion of bounty from the light of the world, and was honored with entering the presence of Baha'u'llah, attending upon him and becoming the object of bestowals and grace. After a time, Azim and Haji Mirza Musa went back to Persia, where he continued to render service to the friends purely for God's sake. Without wage or stipend, he served Mirza Nasrullah of Tafrish for a number of years, his faith and certitude growing stronger with every passing day. Mirza Nasrullah then left Persia for Adrianople, and in his company came Jinabi Azim, and entered the presence of Baha'u'llah. He kept on serving with love and loyalty, purely for the sake of God, and when the convoy departed for Akka, Azim received the distinction of accompanying Baha'u'llah, and he entered the Most Great Prison. In the prison he was chosen to serve the household. He became the water carrier both within doors and on the outside. He undertook many hard tasks in the barracks. He had no rest at all, day or night. Azim, quote, the great, the magnificent, unquote, was magnificent as to character. He was patient, long-suffering, forbearing, shunning the stain of this earth, and since he was the family water carrier, he had the honor of coming into Baha'u'llah's presence every day. He was a good companion to all the friends, a consolation to their hearts. He brought happiness to all of them, the present and the absent as well. Many and many a time Baha'u'llah was heard to express his approval of this man. He always maintained the same inner condition. He was constant, never subject to change. He was always happy-looking. He did not know the meaning of fatigue. He was never despondent. When anyone asked a service of him, he performed it at once. He was staunch and firm in his faith, a tree that grew in the scented garden of God's tenderness. After he had served at the holy threshold for many long years, he hastened away, tranquil, serene, rejoicing in the tidings of the kingdom, out of this swiftly fading life, to the world that does not die. The friends, all of them, mourned his passing, but the blessed beauty eased their hearts, for he lavished grace and praise on him who was gone. Mercies be upon Azim from the kingdom of divine compassion. God's glory be upon him at nightfall and the rising of the sun. Mirza Jafari Yazdi. This knight of the battlefield was one of the most learned seekers after truth, well versed in many branches of knowledge. For a long time he was in the schools, specializing in the fundamentals of religion and religious jurisprudence, and making researches into philosophy and metaphysics, logic and history, the contemplative and the narrated sciences. Footnote. Mankul va Makul, desumed versus excogitated, or knowledge. End of footnote. He began, however, to note that his fellows were arrogant and self-satisfied, and this repelled him. It was then that he heard the cry out of the supreme concourse, and without a moment's hesitation he raised up his voice and shouted, "Yea, verily," and he repeated the words, "O our Lord, we have heard the voice of one that called. He called us to the faith. Believe ye on your Lord, and we have believed." The Quran 3:190. When he saw the great tumult and the riots in Yazd, he left his homeland and went to Najaf, the noble city. Here, for safety's sake, he mingled with the scholars of religion, becoming renowned among them for his own wide knowledge. Then, listening to the voice from Baghdad, he hastened there and changed his mode of dress. That is, he put a layman's hat on his head and went to work as a carpenter to earn his living. He traveled once to Tehran, returned and sheltered by the grace of Baha'u'llah, was patient and content, rejoicing in his garb of poverty. In spite of his great learning, he was humble, self-effacing, lowly. He kept silent at all times and was a good companion to every sort of man. On the journey from Iraq to Constantinople, Mirza Jafar was one of Baha'u'llah's retinue, and in seeing to the needs of the friends, he was a partner to this servant. When he would come to a stopping place, the believers, exhausted by the long hours of travel, would rest or sleep. Mirza Jafar and I would go here and there to the surrounding villages to find oats, straw, and other provisions for the caravan. Footnote: Baha'u'llah was accompanied by members of his family and 26 disciples. The convoy included a mounted guard of 10 soldiers with their officer, a train of 50 mules, and 7 pairs of howdahs, each pair surmounted by 4 parasols. The journey to Constantinople lasted from May the 3rd, 1863, to August the 16th. End of footnote. Since there was a famine in that area, it sometimes happened that we would be roaming from village to village from after the noon hour until half the night was gone. As best we could, we would procure whatever was available, then return to the convoy. Mirza Jafar was patient, long-suffering, a faithful attendant at the holy threshold. He was a servant to all the friends, working day and night, a quiet man, sparing of speech, in all things relying entirely upon God. He continued to serve in Adrianople until the banishment to Acre was brought about, and he too was made a prisoner. He was grateful for this, continuing offering thanks, and saying, "Praise be to God, I am in the fully laden ark." The prison was a garden of roses to him, and his narrow cell a wide and fragrant place. At the time when we were in the barracks, he fell dangerously ill and was confined to his bed. He suffered many complications until finally the doctor gave him up and would visit him no more. Then the sick man breathed his last. Mirza Agha Jan ran to Baha'u'llah with the word of the death. Not only had the patient ceased to breathe, but his body was already going limp. His family were gathered about him, mourning him, shedding bitter tears. The Blessed Beauty said, quote, "Go, chant the prayer of Yah Shafi, O thou the healer, and Mirza Jafar will come alive. Very rapidly he will be as well as ever," unquote. I reached his bedside. His body was cold and all the signs of death were present. Slowly he began to stir. Soon he could move his limbs, and before an hour had passed, he lifted his head, sat up, and proceeded to laugh and tell jokes. He lived for a long time after that, occupied as ever with serving the friends. This giving service was a point of pride with him. To all he was a servant. He was always modest and humble, calling God to mind and to the highest degree full of hope and faith. Finally, while in the most great prison, he abandoned this earthly life and winged his way to the life beyond. Greetings and praise be unto him. Upon him be the glory of the All-Glorious and the favoring glances of the Lord. His luminous grave is in Acre. Hossein Acre Tabrizi. This man who was close to the divine threshold was the respected son of Ali Askari Tabrizi. Full of yearning love, he came with his father from Tabriz to Adrianople, and by his own wish went on with joy and hope to the most great prison. From the day of his arrival at the fortress of Acre, he took over the coffee service and waited upon the friends. This accomplished man was so patient, so docile, that over a 40-year period, despite extreme difficulties, for day and night friend and stranger alike thronged the doors, he attended upon each and every one who came, faithfully helping them all. During all that time, Hossein Agha never offended a soul, nor did anyone, where he was concerned, utter a single complaint. This was truly a miracle, and no one else could have established such a record of service. He was always smiling, attentive as to the tasks committed to his care, known as a man to trust. In the cause of God he was staunch, proud, and true. In times of calamity he was patient and long-suffering. After the ascension of Baha'u'llah, the fires of tests leaped up and a whirlwind of violation battered the edifice down. This believer, in spite of a close tie of friendship, remained loyal, knowing such strength and firmness that he manifested the words, quote, "In the cause of God, the blame of the blamer shall he not fear," unquote. Not for a moment did he hesitate, nor waver in his faith, but he stood firm as a mountain, proud as an impregnable citadel, and rooted deep. The covenant breakers took his mother away to their own place where her daughter lived. They did everything they could think of to unsettle her faith, To an extent beyond belief, they lavished favors upon her and plied her with kindnesses, hiding the fact that they had broken the covenant. Finally, however, that respected handmaid of Baha'u'llah detected the odor of violation, whereupon she instantly quit the mansion of Baji and hurried back to Akka. Quote, "I am the handmaid of the Blessed Beauty," unquote, she said, quote, "and loyal to his covenant and testament. Though my son-in-law were a prince of the realm, what would that profit me? I am not to be won over by kinship and displays of affection. I am not concerned with external tokens of friendliness from those who are the very embodiment of selfish desire. I stand by the covenant, and I hold to the testament," unquote. She would not consent to meet with the covenant breakers again. She freed herself completely from them and turned her face to God. As for Hossein Akha, never did he separate himself from Abdu'l-Bahá. He had the utmost consideration for me and was my constant companion, and it followed that his passing was a formidable blow. Even now, whenever he comes to mind, I grieve and mourn his loss. But God be praised that this man of God, in the days of the Blessed Beauty, remained at all times in close proximity to this house, and was the object of his good pleasure. Time and again Baha'u'llah was heard to comment that Hossein Akha had been created to perform this service. After 40 years of serving, he forsook this swiftly passing world and soared away to the realms of God. Greetings and praise be unto him, and mercy from his bountiful Lord. May his grave be encircled with lights that stream from the exalted companion. His resting place is in Akha. Haji Ali Askar I Tabrizi. The distinguished Ali Askar was a merchant from Tabriz. He was much respected in Azerbaijan by all who knew him and recognized for godliness and trustworthiness, for piety and strong faith. The people of Tabriz, one and all, acknowledged his excellence and praised his character and way of life, his qualities and talents. He was one of the earliest believers and one of the most notable. When the trumpet first sounded, he fainted away, and at the second blast he was awakened to new life. Footnote, from the Quran 39:68-69, quote, "And there shall be a blast on the trumpet, and all who are in the heavens and all who are in the earth shall swoon away, save those whom God shall vouchsafe to live. Then shall there be another blast on it, and lo, arising they shall gaze around them, and the earth shall shine with the light of her Lord." End of footnote. He became a candle burning with the love of God, a goodly tree in the Abha Gardens. He led all his household, his other kindred, and his friends to the faith, and successfully rendered many services. But the tyranny of the wicked brought him to an agonizing pass, and he was beset by new afflictions every day. Still, he did not slacken and was not dispirited. On the contrary, his faith, his certitude, and self-sacrifice increased. Finally, he could endure his homeland no more. Accompanied by his family, he arrived in Adrianople, and here, in financial straits but content, he spent his days with dignity, patience, acquiescence, and offering thanks. Then he took a little merchandise with him from Adrianople and left for the city of Jumieh Bazar to earn his livelihood. What he had with him was trifling, but still it was carried off by thieves. When the Persian consul learned of this, he presented a document to the government naming an enormous sum as the value of the stolen goods. By chance, the thieves were caught and proved to be in possession of considerable funds. It was decided to investigate the case. The consul called in Haji Ali Askar and told him, quote, "These thieves are very rich. In my report to the government, I wrote that the amount of the theft was great. Therefore, you must attend the trial and testify conformably to what I wrote," unquote. The Haji replied, quote, "Your Honor Khan, the stolen goods amounted to very little. How can I report something that is not true? When they question me, I will give the facts exactly as they are. I consider this my duty, and only this," unquote. "Haji," said the colonel, "we have a golden opportunity here. You and I can both profit by it. Don't let such a once-in-a-lifetime chance slip through your hands." The Haji answered, "Khan, how would I square it with God? Let me be. I shall tell the truth and nothing but the truth." The consul was beside himself. He began to threaten and belabor Ali Askar. "Do you want to make me out a liar?" he cried. "Do you want to make me a laughingstock? I will jail you. I will have you banished. There is no torment I will spare you. This very instant I will hand you over to the police, and I will tell them that you are an enemy of the state, and that you are to be manacled and taken to the Persian frontier. The Haji only smiled. Janabi Khan, he said, I have given up my life for the truth. I have nothing else. You are telling me to lie and bear false witness. Do with me as you please. I will not turn my back on what is right. When the consul saw that there was no way to make Ali Askar testify to a falsehood, he said, It is better, then, for you to leave this place so that I can inform the government that the owner of the merchandise is no longer available and has gone away. Otherwise, I shall be disgraced. The Haji returned to Adrianople and spoke not a word as to his stolen goods, but the matter became public knowledge and caused considerable surprise. That fine and rare old man was taken captive in Adrianople, along with the rest, and he accompanied the Blessed Beauty to the Akha fortress, this prison house of sorrows. With all his family, he was jailed in the path of God for a period of years, and he was always offering thanks, because the prison was a palace to him, and captivity a reason to rejoice. In all those years he was never known to express himself except in thankfulness and praise. The greater the tyranny of the oppressors, the happier he was. Time and again Baha'u'llah was heard to speak of him with loving kindness, and he would say, quote, I am pleased with him, unquote. This man, who was spirit personified, remained constant, true, and joyful to the end. When some years had passed, he exchanged this world of dust for the kingdom that is undefiled, and he left powerful influences behind. As a rule, he was the close companion of Abdu'l-Bahá. One day, at the beginning of our time in the prison, I hurried to the corner of the barracks where he lived, the cell that was his shabby nest. He was lying there, running a high fever out of his head. On his right side lay his wife, shaking and trembling with chills. To his left was his daughter, Fatimi, burning up with typhus. Beyond them, his son Hossein Haqqa was down with scarlet fever. He had forgotten how to speak Persian, and he kept crying out in Turkish, My insides are on fire. At the father's feet lay the other daughter, deep in her sickness, and along the side of the wall was his brother, Mashhadi Fatah, raving and delirious. In this condition, Ali Askar's lips were moving. He was returning thanks to God and expressing joy. Praise be to God, he died in the most great prison, still patient and thankful, still with dignity and firm in his faith. He rose up to the retreats of the compassionate Lord. Upon him be the glory of the All-Glorious. To him be salutations and praise. Upon him be mercy and forgiveness for ever and ever. Akha Ali Ikhazvini. This eminent man had high ambitions and aims. He was to a supreme degree constant, loyal, and firmly rooted in his faith, and he was among the earliest and greatest of the believers. At the very dawn of the new day of guidance, he became enamored of the Bab and began to teach. From morning till dark he worked at his craft, and almost every night he entertained the friends at supper. Being host in this way to friends in the spirit, he guided many seekers to the faith, attracting them with the melody of the love of God. He was amazingly constant, energetic, and persevering. Then the perfume-laden air began to stir from over the gardens of the All-Glorious, and he caught fire from the newly kindled flame. His illusions and fancies were burned away, and he arose to proclaim the cause of Baha'u'llah. Every night there was a meeting, a gathering that rivaled the flowers in their beds. The verses were read, the prayers chanted, the good news of the greatest of advents was shared. He spent most of his time in showing kindness to friend and stranger alike. He was a magnanimous being, with open hand and heart. The day came when he set out for the most great prison and arrived with his family at the Akha fortress. He had been afflicted with many a hardship on his journey, but his longing to see Baha'u'llah was such that he found the calamities easy to endure, and so he measured off the miles, looking for a home in God's sheltering grace. At first he had means. Life was comfortable and pleasant. Later on, however, he was destitute and subjected to terrible ordeals. Most of the time his food was bread, nothing else. Instead of tea, he drank from a running brook. Still he remained happy and content. His great joy was to enter the presence of Baha'u'llah. Reunion with his beloved was bounty enough. His food was to look upon the beauty of the manifestation, his wine to be with Baha'u'llah. He was always smiling, always silent, but at the same time his heart shouted, leapt, and danced. Often he was in the company of Abdu'l-Bahá. He was an excellent friend and comrade, happy, delightful, favored by Baha'u'llah, respected by the friends, shunning the world, trusting in God. There was no fickleness in him. His inner condition was always the same, stable, constant, firmly rooted as the hills. Whenever I call him to mind and remember that patience and serenity, that loyalty, that contentment, involuntarily I find myself asking God to shed his bounties upon Akha Ali. Misfortunes and calamities were forever descending on that estimable man. He was always ill, continually subjected to unnumbered physical afflictions. The reason was that when at home and serving the faith in Qazvin, he was caught by the malevolent, and they beat him so brutally over the head that the effect stayed with him till his dying hour. They abused and tormented him in many ways, and thought it permissible to inflict every kind of cruelty upon him. Yet his only crime was to have become a believer, and his only sin to have loved God. As the poet has written, in lines that illustrate the plight of Akha Ali, quote, "By owls the royal falcon is beset. They rend his wings, though he is free of sin. Why, so they mock, do you remember yet that royal wrist, that palace you were in? He is a kingly bird. This crime he did commit. Except for beauty, what was Joseph's sin?" Unquote. Briefly, that great man spent his time in the Akha prison, praying, supplicating, turning his face toward God. Infinite bounty enfolded him. He was favored by Baha'u'llah, much of the time admitted to his presence and showered with endless grace. This was his joy and his delight, his great good fortune, his dearest wish. Then the fixed hour was upon him, the daybreak of his hopes, and it came his turn to soar away into the invisible realm. Sheltered under the protection of Baha'u'llah, he went swiftly forth to that mysterious land. To him be salutations and praise and mercy from the Lord of this world and the world to come. May God light up his resting place with rays from the Companion on high. Akha Muhammad Bakir and Akha Muhammad Ismail the Tailor. These were two brothers who, in the path of God, captives along with the rest, were shut in the Akha fortress. They were brothers of the late Pahlavan Riza. They left Persia and immigrated to Adrianople, hastening to the loving kindness of Baha'u'llah, and under his protection they came to Akha. Pahlavan Riza, God's mercy and blessings and splendors be upon him, praise and salutations be unto him, was a man to outward seeming untutored, devoid of learning. He was a tradesman, and like the others who came in at the start, he cast everything away out of love for God, attaining in one leap the highest reaches of knowledge. He is of those from the earlier time. So eloquent did he suddenly become that the people of Kashan were astounded. For example, this man, to all appearances unschooled, betook himself to Haji Muhammad Karim Khan in Kashan and propounded this question, quote, "Sir, are you the fourth pillar? I am a man who thirsts after spiritual truth, and I yearn to know of the fourth pillar." Footnote. In Shaykhi terminology, the fourth support, or fourth pillar, was the perfect man, or channel of grace, always to be sought. Haji Muhammad Karim Khan regarded himself as such. End of footnote. Since a number of political and military leaders were present, the Haji replied, quote, "Perish the thought. I shun all those who considered me the fourth pillar. Never have I made such a claim. Whoever says I have speaks falsehood. May God's curse be on him." Unquote. A few days later, Pahlavan Riza again sought out the Haji and told him, "Sir, I have just finished your book, Irshadul Awam, that is, Guidance unto the Ignorant. I have read it from cover to cover. In it you say that one is obligated to know the fourth pillar or fourth support. Indeed, you account him a fellow knight of the Lord of the Age." Footnote. The Lord of the Age is the promised 12th Imam. End of footnote. Therefore I long to recognize and know him. I am certain that you are informed of him. Show him to me, I beg of you, unquote. The Haju was wrathful. He said, quote, the fourth pillar is no figment. He is a being plainly visible to all. Like me, he has a turban on his head. He wears an abba and carries a cane in his hand, unquote. Pahlavan Rizal smiled at him. Quote, meaning no discourtesy, he said, there is then a contradiction in your honor's teaching. First you say one thing, then you say another, unquote. Furiously, the Haji replied, I am busy now. Let us discuss this matter some other time. Today I must ask to be excused. The point is that Riza, a man considered to be unlettered, was able, in an argument, to best such an erudite fourth pillar. In the phrase of Alamihili, he downed him with the fourth support. Footnote, Alamihili, the very erudite doctor, title of the famed Shia theologian Jamaluddin Hassan ibn Yusuf ibn Ali Afilah. End of footnote. Whenever that lion-hearted champion of knowledge began to speak, his listeners marveled, and he remained till his last breath the protector and helper of all seekers after truth. Ultimately he became known far and wide as a Baha'i, was turned into a vagrant, and ascended to the Abha kingdom. As for his two brothers, through the grace of the Blessed Beauty, after they were taken captive by the tyrants, they were shut in the most great prison, where they shared the lot of these homeless wanderers. Here during the early days at Akka, with complete detachment, with ardent love, they hastened away to the all-glorious realm. For our ruthless oppressors, as soon as we arrived, imprisoned all of us inside the fortress in the soldiers' barracks, and they closed up every issue so that none could come and go. At that time the air of Akka was poisonous, and every stranger immediately following his arrival would be taken ill. Muhammad Bakir and Muhammad Ismail came down with a violent ailment, and there was neither doctor nor medicine to be had, and those two embodied lights died on the same night, wrapped in each other's arms. They rose up to the undying kingdom, leaving the friends to mourn them forever. There was none there but wept that night. When morning came, we wished to carry their sanctified bodies away. The oppressors told us, quote, you are forbidden to go out of the fortress. You must hand over these two corpses to us. We will wash them, shroud them, and bury them, but first you must pay for it, unquote. It happened that we had no money. There was a prayer carpet which had been placed under the feet of Baha'u'llah. He took up this carpet and said, quote, sell it, give the money to the guards, unquote. The prayer carpet was sold for 170 piastres, and that sum was handed over. Footnote, the Turkish gurush, or piastre of the time, was 40 paras, the para 1/9 of a cent. These figures are approximate only. End of footnote. But the two were never washed for their burial, nor wrapped in their winding sheets. The guards only dug a hole in the ground and thrust them in, as they were, in the clothes they had on, so that even now their two graves are one, and just as their souls are joined in the Abha realm, their bodies are there together, under the earth, each holding the other in his close embrace. The Blessed Beauty showered his blessings on these two brothers. In life they were encompassed by his grace and favor. In death they were memorialized in his tablets. Their grave is in Akka. Greetings be unto them and praise. The glory of the All-Glorious be upon them, and God's mercy and his benediction. Abu Qasim of Sultanabad. Another among the prisoners was Abu Qasim of Sultanabad, the traveling companion of Akha Faraj. These two were unassuming, loyal, and staunch. Once their souls had come alive through the breathings of the faithful spirit, they hastened out of Persia to Adrianople, for such was the unabating cruelty of the malevolent that they could no longer remain in their own home. On foot, free of every tie, they took to the plains and hills, seeking their way across trackless waters and desert sands. How many a night they could not sleep, staying in the open with no place to lay their heads, with nothing to eat or drink, no bed but the bare earth, no food but the desert grasses. Somehow they dragged themselves along and managed to reach Adrianople. It happened that they came during the last days in that city, and were taken prisoner with the rest, and in the company of Baha'u'llah they traveled to the Most Great Prison. Abu Qasim fell violently ill with typhus. He died about the same time as those two brothers, Muhammad Bakir and Muhammad Ismail, and his pure remains were buried outside Acha. The Blessed Beauty expressed approval of him, and the friends, all of them, wept over his afflictions and mourned him. Upon him be the glory of the All-Glorious. Acha Faraj. In all these straits, Acha Faraj was the companion of Abu Qasim. When in Persian Iraq he first heard the uproar caused by the advent of the Most Great Light, he shook and trembled, clapped his hands, cried out in exultation, and hastened off to Iraq. Overcome with delight, he entered the presence of his holy Lord. He was gathered into the loving fellowship and blissfully received the honor of attending upon Baha'u'llah. Then he returned, bearing glad tidings, to Sultanabad. Here the malevolent were lying in wait, and disturbances broke out, with the result that the sainted Mullah Bashi and some other believers, who had none to defend them, were struck down and put to death. Acha Faraj and Abu Qasim, who had gone into hiding, then hurried away to Adrianople to fall, ultimately with the others and with their well-beloved, into the Acha prison. Acha Faraj then won the honor of waiting upon the ancient beauty. He served the holy threshold at all times and was a comfort to the friends. During the days of Baha'u'llah he was his loyal servitor and a close companion to the believers, and so it was after Baha'u'llah's departure. He remained true to the covenant, and in the domain of servitude he stood like a towering palm, a noble, superior man, patient in dire adversity, content under all conditions. Strong in faith and devotion, he left this life and set his face toward the kingdom of God to become the object of endless grace. Upon him be God's mercy and good pleasure in his paradise. Greetings be unto him and praise in the meadows of heaven. The consort of the King of Martyrs. Among the women who came out of their homeland was the sorrowing Fatimi Begum, widow of the King of Martyrs. She was the holy leaf of the tree of God. From her earliest youth she was beset with uncounted ordeals. First was the disaster which overtook her noble father in the environs of Badasht, when, after terrible suffering, he died in a desert caravanserai, died hard, helpless, and far from home. The child was left an orphan and in distress until, by God's grace, she became the wife of the King of Martyrs. But since he was known everywhere as a Baha'i, was an impassioned lover of Baha'u'llah, a man distracted, carried away, and since Nasiruddin Shah thirsted for blood, the hostile lurked in their ambush, and every day they informed against him and slandered him afresh, started a new outcry, and set new mischief afoot. For this reason his family was never sure of his safety for a single day, but lived from moment to moment in anguish, foreseeing and dreading the hour of his martyrdom. Here was the family, everywhere known as Baha'is, their enemies, stony-hearted tyrants, their government, inflexibly, permanently against them, their reigning sovereign, rabid for blood. It is obvious how life would be for such a household. Every day there was a new incident, more turmoil, another uproar, and they could not draw a breath in peace. Then he was martyred. The government proved brutal and savage to such a degree that the human race cried out and trembled. All his possessions were stripped away and plundered, and his family lacked even their daily bread. Fatimi spent her nights in weeping, till dawn broke. Her only companions were tears. Whenever she gazed on her children, she would sigh, wearing away like a candle in devouring grief. But then she would thank God, and she would say, quote, "Praised be the Lord, these agonies, these broken fortunes, are on Baha'u'llah's account, for his dear sake," unquote. She would call to mind the defenseless family of the martyred Hussein and what calamities they were privileged to bear in the pathway of God. And as she pondered those events, her heart would leap up, and she would cry, "Praise be to God, we too have become companions of the Prophet's household." Footnote: Gibbon writes of the Imam Hussein's martyrdom and the fate of his household that, in a distant age and climate, the tragic scene will awaken the sympathy of the coldest reader. End of footnote. Because the family was in such straits, Baha'u'llah directed them to come to the Most Great Prison, so that, sheltered in these precincts of abounding grace, they might be compensated for all that had passed. Here for a time she lived, joyful, thankful, and praising God, and although the son of the King of Martyrs, Mirza Abdul Hossein, died in the prison, still his mother, Fatimi, accepted this, resigned herself to the will of God, did not so much as sigh or cry out, and did not go into mourning. Not a word did she utter to bespeak her grief. This handmaid of God was infinitely patient, dignified and reserved, and at all times thankful. But then Baha'u'llah left the world, and this was the supreme affliction, the ultimate anguish, and she could endure no more. The shock and alarm were such that, like a fish taken from the water, she writhed on the ground, trembled and shook as if her whole being quaked, until at last she took leave of her children and she died. She rose up into the shadowing mercy of God, and was plunged in an ocean of light. Unto her be salutations and praise, compassion and glory. May God make sweet her resting place with the outpourings of His heavenly mercy. In the shade of the divine lote tree, may He honor her dwelling. Footnote: the Sadratul Muntaha, translated inter alia as the Sidra tree, which marks the boundary, and the lote tree of the extremity. It is said to stand at the loftiest point in paradise, and to mark the place beyond which neither men nor angels can pass. In Baha'i terminology, it refers to the manifestation of God. End of footnote. Shamsi Zoha. Khurshid Begum, who was given the title of Shamsi Zoha, the morning sun, was mother-in-law to the King of Martyrs. This eloquent, ardent handmaiden of God was the cousin on her father's side of the famous Mohammed Bakhir of Isfahan, widely celebrated as chief of the ulamas in that city. When still a child, she lost both her parents and was reared by her grandmother in the home of that famed and learned Mojtahid, and well trained in various branches of knowledge, in theology, sciences, and the arts. Once she was grown, she was married to Mirza Hadi-i-Nahri, and since she and her husband were both strongly attracted to the mystical teachings of that great luminary, the excellent and distinguished Sayyid Kashimi Rashti, they left for Karbala, accompanied by Mirza Hadi's brother, Mirza Muhammad Ali-i-Nahri. Footnote: Sayyid Kazim-i-Rashti was a forerunner of the Bab and co-founder of the Sheikhi school. End of footnote. Second footnote: Mirza Muhammad Ali-i-Nahri, his daughter, at a later date, became the consort of Abdu'l-Bahá. End of footnote. Here they used to attend the Sayyid's classes, imbibing his knowledge so that his handmaid became thoroughly informed on subjects relating to divinity, on the scriptures, and on their inner meanings. The couple had two children, a girl and a boy. They called their son Sayyid Ali and their daughter Fatimi Begum, she being the one who, when she reached adolescence, was married to the King of Martyrs. Shamsi Zoha was there in Karbala when the cry of the Exalted Lord was raised in Shiraz, and she shouted back, "Yea, verily." As for her husband and his brother, they immediately set out for Shiraz, for both of them, when visiting the shrine of Imam Hussein, had looked upon the beauty of the primal point, the Bab. Both had been astonished at what they saw in that transplendent face, in those heavenly attributes and ways, and had agreed that one such as this must indeed be some very great being. Accordingly, the moment they heard of his divine summons, they answered, "Yea, verily," and they burst into flame with yearning love for God. Besides, they had been present every day in that holy place where the late Sayyid taught, and had clearly heard him say, quote, "The advent is nigh, the affair most subtle, most elusive. It behoves each one to search, to inquire, for it may be that the promised one is even now present among men, even now visible, while all about him are heedless, unmindful, with bandaged eyes, even as the sacred traditions have foretold." Unquote. When the two brothers arrived in Persia, they heard that the Bab had gone to Mecca on a pilgrimage. Sayyid Muhammad Ali therefore left for Isfahan, and Mirza Hadi returned to Karbala. This is page 177. This memorial will continue on the next tape.